welcome to the Crypto Explorer. It's a podcast by Sygnum Bank, designed to bring you closer to the world of crypto and to the future of finance. I'm your host, Alia Dasgupta, and today I'm joined in our studio by Omar Azhar, who leads enterprise business development at Matter Labs that produces ZK Sync, of course. And he comes from the world of management consulting. He did something in machine learning and AI, and we're going to hear more about this before he ended up in blockchain. And Rico Mueller, who is a vice president on our ventures team here at Sygnum Bank. And we're very excited to have both of you on the show today to talk about what's happening in the zero-knowledge roll-up space, in the roll-up space in general as well, what it means, why it's important, what's going to change about the crypto ecosystem. So thank you both very much for coming on. And before we really dive into the whole zero-knowledge proof stuff, it would be good to kind of start with some introductions. So maybe, Omar, you would like to go first?
Cool. Thanks, Ada. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. So, you know, as you mentioned, I'm leading enterprise business development at Matter Labs. We are the proud creators of ZK Sync. We go live with our ZK EVM layer 2 in about 14 days. So pretty excited about that. I guess from a background perspective, started off with a math and physics background. So naturally, as everyone with that background, start off as a quant. So spent a couple of years in one of the big four managing consulting firms, building risk models, stress testing models, CCAR, Dodd-Frank. Then from there, naturally pivoted into machine learning and AI. And then from there realized, data is the actual problem. And so went into data engineering, started building a business around there, and then realized, you can fix the data as much as you want inside a company. Now you've got interoperability problems of outside the company, right? Entire like banking systems, how do you, all that. And so that's kind of what led me down the path of blockchain. And then, also using it as a retail, trader as well. Naturally then led to ZK Sync and Matter Labs.
Fantastic. That's quite the journey. And I can see sort of how your background makes a lot of sense with what you're doing right now as well. But we'll get into it. First, Rico, give us the background story.
Thanks, Alia. Thanks for having me. I'm a big crypto and DeFi enthusiast and have been in crypto since 2018 and joined Sygnum in 2019 first as a product manager on the tokenization side of our tokenization platform, and recently this year joined the investment team of the Sygnum Ventures team. And living my passion of deep diving into crypto projects, of which ZK Sync is obviously one of the very exciting ones. So happy to be here and discuss.
Fantastic. No, really, really cool to have you both on. I mean, Rico is our resident degen, so his lens on what's going on in the zero knowledge proof is vitally, vitally larger than mine. So I'm glad to have you on, Rico, as well. As we begin, as we start talking about zero knowledge, ZK Sync as a concept, but also what roll-ups are, like there's so much to unpack here. There's so much of this that's quite complex. So maybe as a starting question, right? What is a roll-up? Why do we need roll-ups in the crypto sphere? And maybe, Omar, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. So throughout history, I guess, when you look at all the previous leaps that we've made in different forms of technology, right, there's been kind of what we call 10x moments. And we're kind of facing that same 10x moment, actually multiple of those 10x moments in different factors in crypto, particularly in Ethereum, right? So if you look at history, we start off with, one horsepower, people riding on a single horse. Then you had the Ford Model T, which gave even more horsepower. Then you had essentially, efficiencies and greater combustion power in cars, and then eventually led to jet engines and rockets. And each of those, you can kind of consider as a scaling moment, right? A 10x moment in scale and efficiency and power. And the effect of that has always been an even bigger impact on the applications, the use cases, the economic impact of those scaling moments, right? I think the most recent thing that everyone's fairly aware of is, the internet, right? We started off with in the 90s kilobits per second, and that led to, tens of thousands of websites. Then go to mid 2000s, you have megabits per second, and now you've got streaming gigabits per second, right? And so with each of those scaling moments, you kind of see an even bigger moment in terms of what's possible for us as humans to be able to build and do, right? And so crypto is kind of going through the same moment right now. If you think about Ethereum, you know, right now it does what, about 15 transactions per second. For the sake of, I guess, this conversation, we'll say, okay, there's 10 transactions per second, right? So people can follow through. And there's about to be a couple 10x moments in scalability on Ethereum. You've got one 10x moment in Ethereum itself, right? So they're about to create what do you call floated dank sharding, which will probably happen in the next couple quarters. And that gives you a 10x scalability on just the Ethereum layer. So that's about 100 transactions per second. Then, you know, you have the layer twos, right? Where the main concept is, if you keep data and settlement layer as Ethereum, execution should happen somewhere else, right? And you kind of get into this stacks concept. And so layer two, the reason we have it is because we want to separate execution from the rest of the network, right? Because then you can focus on actual scalability and some other key concepts. And so the layer twos, which, you know, you have your optimistic rollups, you have your zero knowledge rollups, they also all provide a 10x moment in scalability and obviously in usability and some other as well we can go into. And so then now you start considering, okay, we're about to get into hundreds of transactions per second, 1,000 transactions per second. And we've already seen, you know, in the last couple cycles, the different applications we can do, right? You've got DeFi, you've got NFTs, you've got DAOs. But where does that go when you have, you know, 100x in throughput? And that's kind of what everyone's really excited about. And that moment is kind of here and, you know, going to be happening across the next couple months.
Amazing. But I think we also saw this last year, right? With when all the gas prices were going up so much and suddenly everyone was like, holy moly, we really need layer two. We need layer twos now. And for to some extent, we've had layer twos around for a while, at least maybe 2 years or so.
Yeah, that's right. That is right.
And so I don't know, maybe Rico, you want to tell us a little bit about layer twos that have existed and why do we need something different?
Yeah, sure. You're absolutely right. I mean, layer twos as a concept have existed for actually a very long time, for several years, right? I mean, from the very beginning, it was clear that Ethereum, well, not just Ethereum, but the blockchain space in general needs to scale, and layer twos were one of the, you know, very early concepts that were proposed to exactly achieve what Omar has alluded to of kind of separating the execution from the settlement, right? Because that's kind of because if you don't do that, you really try to achieve two things that are kind of you know, contradicting it each other, right? For execution, you really need speed. And for the settlement, you rather need you know, security and what you really achieve with decentralization, right? And these two concepts are kind of you have to choose either one, really, and that's what is really lies at the bottom of the blockchain trilemma, right? Where you have to choose two out of the three of speed, security, and decentralization. And so One approach is exactly what Omar mentioned, is this kind of separation. Rather than do it everything, all these three things in one, rather split it out and have like a modular, what has been called like a modular blockchain design, right? Of separating execution to achieve speed, but still having the secure settlement and data storage through a decentralized and secure setup. And there have been very early on different ideas how to achieve this with state channels or plasma chains that have been explored also in the Ethereum community in the beginning. And some of the organizations or projects that have sort of accompanied Ethereum along its scaling journey, for instance, Polygon, have also actually started out with one of these earlier ideas like plasma chains. And then more recently, sort of the predominant solution has crystallized itself with these rollups that have been mentioned before, like optimistic rollups and CK rollups, and those are also two slightly different solutions. But basically, the idea here is that you execute transactions off chain, right, and then bundle them together and put them on the layer one. And through that, you can really achieve the speed while still being maintaining or relying on the security of the layer one. And that has been kind of the predominant solution, at least in the Ethereum ecosystem for a while.
Yeah, the security and decentralization. With Ethereum focusing on decentralized security, you can then, as you mentioned, split off the execution, have the layer twos and above focus on execution and scalability.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is a little bit what my understanding was as well, right? I understood a little bit, yes, I get what's going on with optimistic rollups. What is the difference with ZK rollups? Why is everyone so excited about them? Maybe this one's for Omar.
Yeah. So initially, you know, there's kind of a staged approach to scaling out Ethereum on the layer two set, right? There was the idea that, okay, optimistic rollups would come first, right? Just from a pure technological standpoint, it was thought that it was easier, it would come first, et cetera. And that's what kind of happened, right? You had Optimism, you had Arbitrum, I think just celebrated 1 year of mainnet recently. And then the idea was, okay, zero knowledge rollups, because, you know, zero knowledge proof, the underlying technology, creating new circuitry, creating the prover would take a couple of years longer. And so that would be the second stage, right? And that was going to be the end game for scaling Ethereum. And the key differences here really is that an optimistic rollup, it's called optimistic because it makes trust assumptions on the transactions, right? It initially will assume that all transactions are valid. And then it's on the job of, I guess, what you might call watchers, essentially, that monitor all the transactions as they're being settled. And essentially, if they find something that's invalid, they'll create a proof, right? Mm-hmm. And so so there is a little trust mechanism involved. And that's mm-hmm. kind of also why you have the 7-day settlement, right? It's essentially a 7 days for someone to create a proof that there is an invalid transaction within a block. And so then you have zero knowledge rollups. Here, there are no trust assumptions made because you're purely relying on the cryptographic validity of the proof, right? And mm-hmm. so that's why settlement is relatively significantly faster. It's pretty much the next block because there's no real way to create an invalid transaction or, let's say, like mess with a valid transaction, right? Because you're essentially, what you're doing is you're creating a cryptographic proof, a zero knowledge proof that these transactions are valid. And so then you send to the sequencer and then they get sent over to Ethereum for settlement.
So if you had to do sort of maybe a little growth chart, right, to explain the evolution. So there was Plasma chain transactions, and then the upgrade from there was optimistic rollups. And now the upgrade from there is zero knowledge rollups. Is that fair? And then if that is in fact the trajectory, what would you say would be the evolution? What changed with each step?
I mean, the evolution from that would be to have further scaling initiatives on the Ethereum layer one level as well, right? That Omar already mentioned, proto-dank sharding, full dank sharding, and then like all of that together really... at the end, we'll arrive at the full, I guess, scaling potential of Ethereum. I'm not sure in terms of rollups if there's another stage, like if there will be. No, I think zero knowledge rollups are really kind of the penultimate stage that everyone's has been talking about now.
Yeah, another key mathematical property about zero knowledge rollups is that they're essentially recursive. Right, and that's why it's considered the end game, because you can essentially have a proof inside a proof, right? And this is kind of where we get into the world of what you might call, say, layer threes or hyperchains, which are essentially coming pretty soon too. We announced that our layer threes will be coming to testnet in Q1 of next year. So what that really is, if you might consider, essentially is a roll up inside a roll up, right? Mm-hmm. So now you've got essentially even more of a 10x as you keep doing that, right? As you curve the proof inside of itself, you get another 10x scalability factor, right? So now when you go to layer threes, that's when you start talking about 100,000 transactions per second or, you know, millions of transactions per second. And that's when we can really start have conversations around, you know, things such as Visa replacing their entire payment rails with Ethereum, right? And that recursive property of zero knowledge rollups is really why it's one of the key reasons that it's considered the end game for scaling Ethereum, because you can keep, you know, putting a roll up inside a roll up inside a roll up. And, you know, it scales because the settlement is still going to be significantly fast. You don't have, you know, that time window where you have to generate any sort of fraud proof or anything. You just rely on pure math to be valid.
Sounds amazingly complicated, but also in a sense, if you can count on the math, then you know that it all works, right? Like there's no trust vector in there like you were talking about with some of the other solutions that we use today. So maybe that's kind of a side question, right? Like what happens to them if they're really talking about the ultimate evolution of roll-up technology? Like do things that are not the ultimate continue to play a role?
Yeah, I think this is where you might get into certain types of specialization, right? Mm-hmm. But I think in the end, if you want to have a general compute or a general ecosystem revolving around Ethereum level security, you know, the idea then would be to for them to move into, say, a layer three, right? And kind of bootstrap their ecosystem and become a roll-up, whether it's an optimistic roll-up or maybe an alternative layer one, right? Mm-hmm. That sits on top in that layer three world, because then their settlement can then be on to layer two, ZK Sync, and then to Ethereum. So it's kind of also just adding yourself onto the ecosystem that ZK Sync is building.
Interesting. I don't know. Rico, what do you think would be the future for optimistic rollups?
That's a really good question. I think in the end, optimistic rollups will also transition to zero knowledge proofs, right? I mean, that's something that, for example, the Optimism team has also mentioned and has on their roadmap. In the end, I mean, why do we have optimistic rollups? They're really also, they were much faster to launch, right? Due to what has been mentioned before, due to this trust assumption, it's just from a technological point of view, a lot easier to implement than the very complex and innovative math that's being used for the zero knowledge proofs. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have been able to use Arbitrum for more than a year now and Optimism as well, whereas the ZK rollups are just now kind of, you know, getting to the market. And with that, I mean really the general purpose kind of ZK EVMs, right, which support any kind of general purpose computation. I think in terms of payments, there have been already for a lot longer ZK rollups that support that. I think ZK Sync as well for several years has supported payments. But you just don't want just payments, right? You want to be able to make swaps on a DEX. You want to be able to purchase NFTs, etc. And for that, you need these ZK EVMs. And that's really the next stage and what is coming now to the market. And I think over the long term, also optimistic rollups will transition to that as the zero knowledge technology gets more robust and proven over time.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, we've had version one of ZK Sync has been out now for a couple of years, and yeah, as you mentioned, it's not a general purpose rollup. It doesn't support smart contracts, so it's mostly payments focus, swaps, mints, deposit withdrawals, and yeah, the EVM is really where everyone's focused, because that's when you got smart contracts, and that's when you can do general computations. That's when, you know, all the different types of applications that we're currently building, you'll be able to build on them, plus all the new types of applications that people are starting to come up with as well. But on top of that, you know, one of the other things that's also happening is not just the scalability, but also the UX capabilities that are happening with features such as account abstraction, which kind of obfuscate away a lot of the current pain points that people have and how they use wallets, how they interact with the blockchain, et cetera. Try and bring more of like a Web 2.0 type seamless interaction, you know, using your email to log in, et cetera. Not having to memorize, you know, 12 phrase private keys or 24 phrase private keys. And then also on top of the EVM, there's also now discussions around, you know, how do we bring in the other languages beyond Solidity, right? C++, mm-hmm. Python, Go, Rust. How do you start actually building applications on top of the blockchain with, you know, the modern languages that everyone is familiar with and used to?
Sure. I mean, there's another quite in the news roll-up that everyone talks about, right? Like, where does Polygon sort of fit in this paradigm of optimistic versus ZK roll-ups? And then I know that they're also doing something with their, they're also planning to launch their zero-knowledge version. Like, what? How does this fit into the story, just if I was trying to create, like, a map of the ecosystem?
Maybe I'll start off here. Yes, Polygon has as a different, it's like a suite of scaling solutions, right? They have the, mm-hmm. the most well-known is their POS chain, which is like an EVM fork, right? And before that, they even, as I mentioned, started out with like a Plasma chain. Mm-hmm. But now they're adding on other scaling solutions on top of that, like the Polygon ZK EVM that they're that they announced, and mm-hmm. that in the end I believe will also then or might be connected with the POS chain. And in terms of how it compares to ZK Sync, I'm actually not sure. Maybe Omar can shed a bit more light on that.
Yeah. So Polygon is coming up with their ZK EVM. They just wanted to test that this week. So I guess when you consider the zero knowledge rollup, there's really four competitors in this space right now, right? You have Starknet. Mm-hmm. They were pretty much the first one out with a general purpose zero knowledge rollup that they went to mainnet earlier this year, I believe. Then you have us and ZK Sync. We'll be going to mainnet in about 2 weeks. And then you have Scroll and you have Polygon. Now, between the four of them, there's really, I guess, what you might call three kind of approaches, right? There's the decision of, do you want to be EVM compatible or not first? Mm-hmm. Starknet, and this is kind of where a lot of engineering trade-offs happen, right? And you can look back at it in hindsight and see, okay, this is what happened, etc. But, EVM compatibility means, do you want to make your rollup be fully compatible with what's already been built on Ethereum, right? And I think that's a huge factor. And so ZK Sync, Scroll, and Polygon have gone the EVM route, right? Mm-hmm. We want to bootstrap on top of the Ethereum ecosystem. We want you to be able to use Solidity and all the different tooling infrastructure you already have. Starknet went with a different approach. It's not a ZK EVM. It's its own zero-knowledge rollup. They've built this very specific purpose-built language called Cairo. Mm-hmm. And so you can't necessarily use what's already been built on Ethereum. You can't use the same code base. You can't use same tooling and developer infrastructure. It has to be kind of rebuilt in their kind of pillar almost. Then if you go to the EVM chains, so ZK Sync, Scroll, Polygon, there's a different two different approaches, right? One is be complete what we call EVM equivalence, right? Which would be completely full 100% compatibility. And then there's EVM compatible, which is, 80, 90, 95% compatible. But for the most part, there isn't that much difference between those two, because even on the EVM compatible side, out of say about 140 or so, what you might call opcodes or machine instructions, really, only about two or three are right now not supported on ZK Sync. Okay, so that means for the most part, 99% of code bases work out of the box. Scroll and Polygon, 100% of your code base works out of the box that you've already built on Ethereum. So those are, I guess, the different approaches and really what separates them.
But you guys are getting to market quite quickly. That's the word of the street.
Yeah, I mean, since we've been in the zero knowledge rollup game for a couple of years, we built quite a lot of experience. We've had our testnet out since public testnet out since February. So we've had about 9 months or so just to test it. We've got over 100 different companies have been building on it. So we've gotten a lot of feedback, done a lot of checks on security. And so we're pretty excited about, you know, being the first ZK EVM that goes to mainnet in about 2 weeks. The other thing I'd like to also add, you know, is beyond just the scaling, I think a huge factor, a huge benefit of being compatible, right, instead of being purely 100% equivalent, is that we're able to add additional features. We've got some flexibility there, right? And so one of the key features is what we call account abstraction. And here you can kind of, instead of the traditional way of creating accounts, you can now have accounts that are smart contracts, right? Mm-hmm. And so what that really means is, well, I can do social recovery on my accounts, right? I can enable multi-sig on my accounts. I can enable rate limiting. For example, on my smart contract wallet, like an Argent, I can essentially tell it, you know, hey, only allow $100 worth of trades in a 24-hour given time span, right? Or I can say, okay, I want these other accounts as my multi-sig. And so there's a lot of improvements on the user experience side of things that are also being enabled by being EVM compatible because you have the flexibility to add them on.
Sure, sure. And I mean, I don't know. So Rico and I were at ETC, right? And we saw all the layer two announcements sort of come at the same moment. And it was like this very serendipitous moment in time where everyone was like, okay, we're there. We're ready with our zero knowledge roll up technology. What do you think led to this sort of meeting of all three? Was it three at that time? Yeah, it was three, right? Three that made the announcements.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scroll was Scroll, Polygon, I think, at that time. ZK Sync as well. Yeah.
But I'm just like, how did all three happen at the same time? What was going on there?
It's just competition, you know. there's three really good teams working on the same problem statement. I think a lot of people completely underestimated how quick, you know, we would get there, how quick everyone would get to zero knowledge rollups. It wasn't expected. And I think that's just the competitive nature of the market as it is mm-hmm. right now, right? Everyone's competing to be first. Everyone's competing to get to the market first. And so, you know, it just happens. I think that's kind of an awesome thing about this space right now. And that's what's making it very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's watching, like, nibbling their fingernails in excitement and anticipation. It's all very exciting. And having said that, okay, so here I'm going to zoom back out a little bit. As a person that engages with Web3 but isn't necessarily a developer, isn't somebody who's actually building something, I understand that rollups mean scalability. I can do faster transactions. What actually changes in the way I engage with Web3 tomorrow? Maybe Rico, you want to start here?
Sure. I think the first point that really is like a noticeable change is obviously the scalability, right?
Yeah.
We're going to have much more scale thanks to these ZK rollups. Mm-hmm. In the end, I mean, through ZK EVMs, it's not like you're using a different, like as a user, right? You're still going to be using your MetaMask, your Ledger. It's just going to be much faster to make transactions, right? And cheaper. And but the second thing which I would add here and that Omar has already touched upon is the privacy applications that it enables as well, right? Because basically what this zero knowledge technology does is it enables me to basically verifiably prove that I have something or that without basically revealing it, right? So, for example, I can prove that I have a CryptoPunk or a Bored Ape on my wallet without actually revealing the address of my wallet. And you and everyone can mathematically verify that statement is correct, right? And so there's very exciting privacy applications that are enabled through that. And there's some projects that are focusing on that specifically, like, for instance, Sysmo. Aztec is another example here that's a layer two at the same time that enables really those to have privacy and scalability at the same time. So I think those are probably the two most noticeable changes from user perspective, but maybe there's more that I'm not aware about, Omar. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you kind of hit there right there. So obviously scalability, you know, instead of, you know, we were used to sometimes seeing a couple hundred dollars per transactions during peak moments, right? You're going to start seeing transactions at a penny, or a lot of times it's going to start getting below a penny. And so that the impact of that is a lot, right? One, it makes a lot of different other types of applications be possible. For example, gaming, right? I think we're seeing a lot more traditional game studios now become serious about building on blockchain because it's now feasible to build it on blockchain, right? Previously, it was not. You also start seeing a lot of adoption in outside of, let's say, the Western world where, you know, for some of us, a $5 per transaction is fine, whatever, right? We're getting the Ethereum low security. But for most of the world, that makes it completely inaccessible. But now when you go down to transactions that are a penny, maybe even less than that, that makes being on the Ethereum blockchain much more accessible for everyone in the rest of the world, right? And so it, just that alone is going to create, open up whole new ways that people work with Ethereum. For example, like in South America, the bank, or South America, Africa, or Southeast Asia, the banking, the retail banking sector is very different from, say, how it is in the US, where we're credit card focused, or how it is in Europe as well, right? And so these are entirely different ways of, you know, retail payments, processing, etc. I think that's also a very exciting world that we're going to see. And then just from a way people interact, you're going to start seeing a lot of the current pains that people have with, you know, how wallets work, like I was mentioning, you know, you have to remember your private keys, etc. I think you'll start to see a lot of that go away. You'll start to see just a one-click sign-in type things happen. You'll start to see one-click sign-in, one-click interactions, you know, no more paying on MetaMask, like signing every single transaction, signing for all these different gas fees. The UX is going to significantly improve, where applications are able to obfuscate a lot of that away, so we can actually start approaching mass market, and, you know, non-crypto native users can actually start, you know, interacting with it, not even realize they're using the blockchain.
I mean, that's kind of the vision with these wallets like Argent and Dharma and so on, right? Like they're doing something in this sort of mass adoption of crypto space. And there's many reports also now coming out of, I think, Africa and stuff, where the adoption of crypto is actually way higher than it is in many parts of the Western world, just because it, as soon as it becomes easily accessible, this provides a financial base that may be stronger than what exists through government created.
Yeah, I think especially in this high inflationary environment, you'll start to see, as people have access to stable coins, why would you not utilize that, right? And maintain whatever the wealth factor, et cetera, rather than have it be inflated away.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just very exciting in terms of the where it can take crypto adoption in the next year or 2 years. One of the questions that sort of comes up when you think about all these different layer twos and then layer threes above them, and then also the fact that we're looking at a multi-chain universe where there are other blockchains with lots of innovations also happening, there's fundamentally quite a lot of fragmentation. And if you consider that we're looking at this for mass DeFi adoption, then we're also going to see a fragmentation of the liquidity that's available. And I don't know how you guys see that sort of rolling out. Maybe Rico?
Yeah, I think you raise a very, very important point here. I mean, that's not an easy problem at all. Obviously, through these different layer twos and side chains and so on, you're absolutely right. You create a little bit of silos where the liquidity is fragmented. Yes, there are bridges, but we also all know how much of a risk these bridges are with the many hacks that happen all the time with these bridges.
Pretty much every hack this year has been a bridge.
A lot of bridges.
Just recently, the hack with Binance.
Oh my God!
The BNB bridge, right? So, I am inclined to say yes, bridges are the solution to the liquidity fragmentation problem. But then at the same time, they have a lot of issues themselves. but I'm not sure how else you would be able to solve that. I think zero knowledge rollups are already much better than optimistic rollups due to not having this withdrawal period, right? So that already helps a lot. You can withdraw back to L1 without delay and without having to rely on a bridge, right? So basically with almost zero risk, right? So I think that already helps a lot. But then how do you solve the liquidity fragmentation between, let's say, the implementation of scroll and then CK sync and so on, right? That's another question, right? Where I'm as a crypto enthusiast, very curious to see what the market will come up with. As of now, I personally do not have the solution for it. Otherwise, I would just go and build it. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, the liquidity fragmentation is a very interesting one. I think that it'll be interesting to see how that evolves in the next couple of months, especially as, we fully believe that the Ethereum ecosystem is going to move to ZK EVMs, right? So as Scroll and Polygon come online and as we start ramping up our ecosystem, it'll be interesting to see how, I think Ethereum naturally will start moving to those three. In terms of the alternatives, the alternative layer ones, et cetera, I think it, beyond just the liquidity fragmentation issue, there's also the security issue as well, right? If you're going to move, if you're a large fund, you want to move, billions of dollars on chain, security starts to become a very significant concept too, beyond just liquidity. And in that one, I think it's pretty clear Ethereum is significantly large and it's pretty much the Fort Knox for crypto and blockchain and DeFi at this point. So I think we at Matterlabs believe that you'll probably start seeing some of the alternative layer ones start to want to more align with Ethereum to take advantage of that security layer while still having their own kind of like chain, right? I think, and that was what I was kind of alluding to with the layer threes, that actually layer threes actually make it possible for them to align with Ethereum from a security standpoint, but still have, their own existing architecture, et cetera. But yeah, the liquidity fragmentation one though, if you just think about the Ethereum ecosystem with the different layer twos, I think that's going to be an interesting, evolution of the ecosystem we'll be seeing.
Yeah. I mean, I think because it's all such a sort of newly developing saga, it means that a lot of solutions will start to emerge out of necessity rather than something that can be thought about or planned for right now.
maybe another point worth to mention that doesn't really solve the underlying liquidity issue, but at least from a user's perspective, I think you will increasingly will not have to think about, okay, am I going to, do my trade on the ZK rollup of Scroll or ZK sync or another one, but instead kind of abstract it away on the application layer, right, on the UI, and then there's going to be like similar to what we have right now with DEX aggregators, where you don't have to anymore go to the different DEXs and check for the best price. That's what the DEX aggregator does for you. Basically the same concept, but at a higher level where, it's just going to execute the best trade on the the optimal roll-up. But yeah, I think that's at least for the user, it's going to extract that issue away. But that, again, doesn't solve the underlying. You're still going to have different liquidity pools on different roll-ups. And that one, I think, is going to be difficult to kind of solve completely.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Yeah, I think we will start to see those cross-chain aggregators kind of start to evolve and become a thing. That's a pretty good point, yeah.
Yeah, solutions will emerge as the adoption onto these ZK rollups also starts to build up, right? Cool. I mean, we're definitely way over time, but thank you guys both so much for coming on the podcast today. It was really good to dive into this a little bit. I think there's so much more room for exploration. So maybe I can already think of several themes for a follow-up episode. But for our listeners, if you've got ideas about people we can bring on the show or more questions, please write into podcast@signum.com. And until the next time, then, ciao.
Thanks.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.